And welcome, everybody, to episode 17 of Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina. I'm your host, Aaron, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow host, Christina. And this week, we are joined by a special guest, Payson of the Fan Leagues. How you doing, Payson?
I'm doing great, Aaron. I'm super excited that you guys welcomed me to your podcast. I've been listening since you invited me, and I've been super excited since this episode was planned. So very, very excited.
And we are doing film noir this week, covering Blade Runner, specifically the final cut, since that's version that's available on HBO Max, and in general, the version recommended for people to see. We won't get into all the different cuts that you can watch another YouTube video on that. Anyways, before we get completely into this movie, I want to check. How are you doing today, Christina?
I'm doing well. Today was the first day that all of my students could come back. So today was a good day. And I was very excited to see their eyeballs because we're still wearing masks. But it was so nice. A lot of my eighth graders, a lot of my former students came back to visit me today. So it was so nice to see some familiar faces. So today was a good day.
That is excellent news. And I thought at first when you said eyeballs, you were making a deep reference to Blade Runner. I was going to be like, oh man, Christina really paid attention to those details. Judging from my conversation with her before, I'm not sure those types of analysis are going to be coming from her this episode. It's going to be an interesting one. Definitely strap in. Christina is becoming a real podcaster, watching movies that maybe she never would have finished otherwise or maybe watched. But before we get into this movie completely, I always like to ask the guests about kind of their personal history with the movie. So what is your kind of history with this movie? Why do you choose this as your film noir and specifically a movie you wanted to talk about?
So I discovered this movie. I specifically remember in 2015, I was 17 years old and I actually discovered it. I'm so sorry, guys.
I got engaged in 2015.
I got my first back pains at. Go on. Go on, youngster.
It was right around the time that I had finally gotten HBO because I had wanted to watch Game of Thrones for so long. And my mom literally told me, you can't watch Game of Thrones until you're 17 years old. The second I turned 17, I was like, all right, I'm 17. I'm paying for it. Let's go. And one day I was like, you know, there are a lot of movies on here. I want to take a look at this. And I had been a fan of Alien for a little while, which is another great, great Ridley Scott movie. And I was like, oh, he directed Blade Runner as well, which is usually the one that people go back and forth. Like, is Blade Runner Alien his best movie? There are some other ones that are all obviously great, but to me, those are definitely his top two. And I watched it and I just completely fell in love with it. There are a lot of things that I personally love, like quite a few anime films that are very heavily inspired by Blade Runner. I'd sort of begun to start dipping my toes into film noir around that time. I think I'd just seen like Double Indemnity, and it just all the right things clicked, and I was just obsessed with the movie since I first saw it.
Well, this is definitely going to be an interesting podcast today, because this is one that for me, I've attempted to watch Blade Runner, I think more than any movie that I've ever attempted to watch in my life. And I watch lots of slow burns, lots of, different paced, both detective and science fiction type of stories. And it was almost, and I continue to kind of have this opinion, and we'll get into it more, is it's too soothing for me almost, man. Like, the soundtrack puts me to bed. And not in a bad way. I love it. It's beautiful. I'm listening. Yeah. But it is like with the dulcet lighting and tones on the screen, how beautiful it is. It's like I pulled up a really dope YouTube video with like a still, like almost still background at times, because it's just so dark and it's kind of calmly lit and the music makes me tired. I have fallen asleep to this movie more times than any movie I've ever seen. I don't have a life like Christina. I don't take care of children like Christina and things like this, her being a teacher, in case people are tuning in for the first time here. But just so I don't think you just have like a bunch of like children.
You just have 87 of my own children just all around my yard.
Don't worry, she's a laborer. She gets paid for the kids she takes care of. Like, so I had time to like really, you know, kind of fight through it. But even this week, there were a few times I was watching, I was somewhat into it, but I was just like, this is beautiful. This sounds beautiful. I was asleep. So it's fascinating to me to hear a 17-year-old. It makes sense that Payson at 17 was more mature than I am at 31. So like, actually, this doesn't surprise me. At 17, you were able to handle this on a first watch. But Christina, obviously, we'll get into her thoughts too. Do you have anything to kind of say about the movie without completely giving away your feelings before we hop in?
Well, I watched it this afternoon after work and I fell asleep. I did not rewind the part that I missed.
So we're going to have a lot of pace and thoughts on this episode. I did end up watching it fully conscious to be, not to brag. Christina, you know.
All right, but let's go into film. What does film noir mean? Let's go into our synopsis, and then we will jump into our digestion of this movie.
Sure thing. And so I'll just pull up a really quick film noir definition, courtesy of Britannica. It was came up by the French in the 40s to describe American crime films. And basically, it's a filmmaking style characterized by such elements as a cynical hero, check, stark lighting effects, check, frequent use of flashbacks, check, intricate plots. Yeah, not so sure on this. I was actually surprised with that. And underlying existentialist philosophy, triple check for sure. And yeah, definitely here. And Christina, now over to you for the synopsis.
As always, guys, I just look at IMDb and just read what it says. So a Blade Runner must pursue and terminate four replicants who stole a ship in space and have returned to Earth to find their creator. The first thing I'm going to say is the fact that nobody runs with blades in this movie. Why is he called a Blade Runner? It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. Why is he not just called like the replicant catcher?
Knowing Ridley Scott, probably because it sounds a lot cooler.
I think literally that's the reason behind it, because this is based on a novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And so, and I'm blanking on the author's name right now.
Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. Dick. And I don't believe that was a term used within the book. But yeah, no blades were ran in this entire book. But yeah, it's a really simple plot, which I was under the assumption it was going to be much more complicated and a little more unpredictable than it ended up being as it went on. It really, for me overall, my thoughts on the movie, I thought it was in, you know, not in a mean way, but very much style over substance for the most part, maybe because some of the philosophical elements have been covered so much within our media at this point, and specifically with things I've watched, that this, it seems familiar at this point, which is somewhat a problem sometimes of influential cinema. That's kind of my thoughts overall on going into it. Or leaving it, I should say.
Yeah, 100%. I think my major pushback to those are always like, this did come out in 1982. So it is fair, like how many of that stuff that you're thinking of came out before 82? And I totally, if that's your takeaway, 100%, I just think it just to put a little bit of context to that.
Yeah, definitely is mostly post. And I mean, I can recognize that this movie influenced it, but I've seen the movies that influenced it before I saw this, and it,
that's fair.
So it did kind of cause me not to really get invested in, do they have feeling? I've kind of thought about AI and, you know, this movie walks so other movies could run for sure, but it was hard.
You know what movie ran because of this movie?
Which one?
I, Robot. One of the greatest movies of all time. I'm bringing it up because it's my podcast and I can. So I thought this related a lot in the sense of these things were built, right? And the robots and iRobot were built essentially to be like our assistants. And then it's how they evolve, which I felt like this kind of was a part of that, where these replicants were created to be slaves. And then they, you know, in a shocking turn of events, they didn't want to be slaves anymore. So you have that aspect. But in this case, they looked like people and they could have memories like people did. And it wasn't as machinery as it was when you're dealing with actual robots. So it was like a really hard thing to disassociate your feelings from. But I liked how this movie like opened up and it kind of just spelled everything out for you. Like, this is why these were made. Their lifespan is only 4 years. Like, they just like boom, 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 boom. I mean, your opening shot is you see an interview and you're kind of like, at that point I was like, well, I didn't really know who was the replicant here. Like, what were we going with this? And then like, you know, a guy gets murdered like 2 minutes into the movie and I'm like, all right, I'm all in. And then I stopped being all in because it became a snooze fest and Harrison Ford couldn't have been more boring.
Snooze fest is not how I would personally describe it. I definitely think part of the noir genre is it usually is a little bit more slow storytelling. It usually allows you to figure it out. But no, I still am just – the reason why this movie engages me partly is because of how grimy and just on the – just streets feeling it feels. Like, I love how even though we're in the future, we still have characters just wearing, like, long trench coats and they're still just using, like, normal-ass guns. And I love the synth score. Definitely keeps me engaged. But But if it didn't keep you engaged, then that's totally fair as well.
Yeah, I'm like very slow movies don't really do anything for me. I'm also like not super into sci-fi. So like I'm okay. At this point, like 0-2 in this movie. Fantasy and sci-fi are just not genres I get down with.
They're some of my favorites, but yeah, I totally get that.
But I thought like overall though, if we're not necessarily the plot was engaging, but I feel like the overall themes of this movie are what makes it what it is. Because I don't feel like actually watching it is a good time. Like, I'm not going to be like, can't wait to watch Blade Runner later. But, like, it is something to talk about.
No, 100%. I definitely think the rewatchability for this movie is the themes and the philosophies that it does raise about what is humanity, what is mankind. And at the end of the day, one of the biggest theories that surrounds this movie is whether or not Deckard was a replicant or not, which I have opinions on, but I would love to hear your guys' opinions.
Yeah, we can jump into that. Honestly, I do agree that the overall plot of this movie, I mean, it does set up so that these themes can be explored more than like the mystery of it. It is kind of spelled out, especially after what ends up happening with Tyrell later in the movie, which Game of Thrones totally ripped off. Speaking of HBO and Game of Thrones, we know where they got that from, the mountain scene. Yeah. Straight from Blade Runner, like literally down to the angle they used. So after that part, it turns into kind of a different type of movie almost, because the replicants have accepted their fate now. And it's just like you kind of are seeing them lose it. And it's just like they're only here for 4 years. If you extended their lifespan, it's like they're taking over within 10 years. Like, is where they're at in 4 years. Like,
I thought that was a clever failsafe. Like, I thought that was like a really clever thing to do, that you just give them a very short lifespan, because that's exactly what would happen. They would eventually advance enough to overtake us. So how do you're not going to click a button and have them blow up randomly. You just would have them eventually.
Well, if you're Westworld, it's in the spine, I believe. They put like a little mine that if they leave Westworld, which Westworld also clearly.
It's also very typical of the technology we have. Like, how often do you replace your phone or your laptop? Like, every couple years, you need to upgrade your technology. Things don't work as well. We need, you need the change. So it kind of like foreshadows for a movie made in 1982 is how we live a lot today.
No, absolutely. Yeah. But once again, if these things can think and if these things can form memories, then it makes you wonder, like, if they're put on this earth and they know they only have 4 years, you would understand for just a certain group of replicants to be like, hey, we want answers. Why were we tortured like this? Why are we put through the ringer and then we only have 4 years? Like, that is all at the end of the day. Hold on, I can name all of them. Roy, Pris, Leon, and Zora. That's what they're trying to find at the beginning of the film, is they just want answers for why are you doing this to us and why are we treated as monsters?
Yeah, and I always like to think about when we're talking about older movies, this movie was made 40 years ago. Now, I mean, that's a really long time ago to have so much of the technological aspects hold up pretty well. I mean, obviously Los Angeles didn't look like this in 2019. No, but I mean, that's not really the point. That's a stylistic aspect. I don't think that was meant to be taken literal, but I mean, the technological aspects, and we're not quite having the question of if Alexa's a human or not yet. But it's around the corner. Those questions are going to start happening as things, I think, start to continue to evolve in a rapid pace.
No. Yeah, I think you're 100% right, Aaron. I think we're going to start having those conversations. I know, like, Alexa can now play, like, chess with you, I think. And, like, that's
a little my Alexa
for me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and chess is a big part of this movie with Sebastian and Tyrell. Not a big part, but it's a part of the movie. To get back to the question of, is Deckard a human or replicant? First of all, Christina, do you even care or have an opinion on
that? I didn't think he was, only because of the four-year thing. So it made it seem to me like he's been around for quite some time.
Okay.
I never even thought that. And then Anthony told me later that he was like, one of the theories is that he is because of the unicorn situation. I will let you guys talk about this.
Yeah. We'll talk about the unicorn. My opinion is the movie becomes much less effective if he's a replicant.
Thank you. Yes.
I believe he is 100% a human. I don't care how bad Ridley Scott wants it the other way. So he added a scene with the unicorn. I believe he's a human. Payson, I want kind of your thoughts are going to, and then I'll add on anything that you might not leave, but I doubt you'll leave much. So go ahead. Your thoughts on this theory. It's one of the biggest questions with the movie, for sure. Yeah. It's still discussed to this day. And I just a real quick side note, I watched Blade Runner 2049, loved it. And I also really loved how Denis Villeneuve deals with that question of essentially like, fuck you, it doesn't matter. This is the sequel. So it's but I think if Denis was in a room without any cameras, he would say that Deckard was a human. I know he would.
Yeah, I believe so. Denis is smart enough. He's one of my favorite directors working today, but we'll get to that.
Deckard is a human.
Yes. I believe the story is more interesting if Deckard is a human, specifically just because of what I view Blade Runner to be about. When you meet Deckard at the beginning, he is someone who has completely lost his humanity. He is emotionless. He is just there to do the job. He is there to kill what he is sent out to kill, and he does not question it. Through meeting Rachel and through falling in love with Rachel, and through, I'm sure we're going to get to that scene, and I have a lot of things to say about that scene. Through at the end of the day, banging Rachel, he eventually learns to have feelings again, even to the point where when he's finally face down with Roy, he sees the humanity in Roy when Roy is about to kill him. If Deckard is just a replicant, then I don't really think it's that interesting to know that, like, his humanity is gone from the beginning, because it's like, well, yeah, because he's a robot. Like, to me, there are so many more layers to this movie if he is a human, and that's why I personally like to view it as him being a human.
Yeah, and Christina already just looking so happy to be here on the podcast.
One thing was, like, it never even crossed my mind because it just made it seem like he had quite the past that, like, other people were aware of. So then for him to be a replicant, that everyone's in on this, like, conspiracy that, like, he has implanted memories and they know all about it too, and everyone is in on it. So, like, so if he's the only one that didn't have a lifespan of 4 years, if we're going to go back to iRobot, how the one robot was allowed to be different than all the other ones, I mean, maybe. Who knows?
You need to keep going back to iRobot. No one has.
Did iRobot not totally rip this entire movie off?
Yeah, I mean, but it's like a very. This is like through this conversation, I'm becoming more of a fan of Blade Runner, which this happens with a lot of films as I get to talk about them. My rating at the end will be based on my viewing before conversations, just because it's a first time viewing rating. But yeah, I do think that it just doesn't work on a lot of levels. Like, he gets kind of physically manhandled and beat up multiple times in the movie and then ends up killing the, you know, snake stripper right after she beats him up. So it's like, why would she like let him get beat up and then just like then end up shooting her in the back and killing her, which was really kind of fucking weird and sad, but a really beautiful death also. Shout out, to, was that Sean Young?
The snake stripper?
Yeah. Which one was Sean Young?
No, Sean Young is Rachel.
Rachel. Okay. Yeah. I just know Sean Young is Einhorn from Ace Ventura. So I'm just saying. I just wanted to make sure.
Sean Young. Ridley Scott has gone back and forth so much with whether he believes he's a replicant or a human that I'm not even sure if he even had an idea when he made the movie, but I choose to believe he's a human. So take up your
issue. We can refer back to one of my favorite episodes of this show, the Blair Witch episode. If you can have a theory or a view that makes a movie more interesting, do it. Because it's just like, why not? Like, so... I think that this movie is way more interesting with him being a human. I do think that is the case. We'll move on, start to move into some particular maybe scenes that stood out to us. Christina, is there any scenes at all from this movie that stood out? I have
two really big standouts. The one of him shooting the girl in the back was pretty huge. One, her outfit was a choice. I appreciate that they felt 2019 fashion included like clear raincoats. It's like, wow, you're just like shooting at somebody basically in a crowd. He was like, move away. And everyone did. And I was like, man, people are good listeners in 2019. I don't recall that being a thing. But to shoot someone in the back, I mean, even if like I understand that that's like your job, that's just like, I don't know, that's just a crappy move. But then that would show that maybe he's not a replicant, because I feel like that's a cowardice move and you would assume that replicants don't have feelings.
So you think that proves he's a human?
Yeah. Oh, I always thought he was a human. I never once thought he was a replicant. Yeah. Because I was like, this dude seems like he's alive longer than 4 years. And that's, there you go. That's math. Like, that debunked the theory. You seem like you've been alive longer than 4 years. Everyone else seems like you've been alive longer than 4 years.
Well, doesn't it all the replicants seem like they've been alive longer? Those who play devil's advocate.
Yeah, but nobody else thinks that they've been alive longer than 4 years. Like that, you know how many people... Like, this isn't the Truman Show. Like, how many people would have to be in on this?
Maybe they're all replicants.
Maybe it's just all replicants and there's no humans left. And it
maybe
should...
we're replicants.
Maybe.
James Olmos is a replicant as well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's very interesting in this movie. He looked unrecognizable from what I'm familiar to recognizing. I loved his character, actually. where we want to go.
What about with him meeting with Rachel and then discovering that she is in fact a replicant and she didn't know? And that was really kind of sad because she had memories.
Yeah, which weren't her own, which were implanted into her. So
that was kind of a bummer. I felt bad.
When Rachel learns she's a replicant, that is a very heartbreaking moment. For sure.
And did you feel that it was necessary for these replicants to know they were replicants? Do you think that what Tyrell's decision to not let her know was wise? Did you that they wouldn't be able to figure it out on their own?
The purpose of them was basically to be like slave robots. I mean, I guess it wouldn't have mattered anyway, because ideally they weren't ever really supposed to escape. Like, they were made for a purpose, so it wouldn't have mattered anyway. I found it weird, though, that, see, again, in iRobot, there's always one that is different, and the creator purposely makes them different. It's like the experiment of, like, will the technology evolve enough for this to be as close to human as possible?
And just to touch real quickly on this, the slave element of this movie is interesting, too, because slave owners probably used to view their slaves as less than human, as not human. And then when they started to desire to be free and be their own people, well, no, they can't. Like, we need to control them. And then there'd be the ones closer to slave owners who maybe slept in the house, who would keep everybody in order. And like, then eventually, when I'm very oversimplifying a huge issue here, but when eventually those closest to them also started wanting the freedom to revolt, then that's when things really started to break loose. And Blade Runners, essentially, you could just call slave, runners or slave catchers. And
right. 100%, like, yeah.
Then essentially it's a one-to-one analogy to slave runner, slave catcher scenario.
Well, I also thought it was interesting they never said that they were killing them. They were retiring them. Which is just another way to like say
just
that you're
rebranding,
not
murdered, right? Rebranding slaughter. It's like, really, I would anticipate on rewatches, you start to feel worse and worse for the replicants.
Oh, absolutely.
As you watch this. So it does make it interesting to have a discussion with someone who's seen this movie probably, 20, 30 times at this point you've seen it?
I'd probably say around the 15, 20 mark.
15 to 20. Yeah. But either way, like multiple viewings, allowing marinating, allowing different. I know the value of rewatches 100%. This is a movie that on a first time view, especially if it didn't work as well for us exactly, is these themes start to come out as we talk about, but they were hard to completely approach on a first watch. So I wouldn't say that much, but looking back at it now, I mean, even as usual, I'm jumping around here, but when the stripper was shot in the back, you hear the police kind of talking to the crowd and being like, move along. Like, this stuff happens all the time. They didn't know it was even a human or a replicant. They're just taught to not pay attention, or they are so used to replicants being killed in front of, or whatever it is. Like, no one even stops. And like, the cops are just like, all right, as usual, move along. These little weavings of the world building without stopping for 20 minutes to explain it are done pretty brilliantly in this movie.
Yeah, and I mean, you would assume, because like, you see the large scoping shots of Neo Los Angeles, you see with all the billboards and the holograms, like, you would assume there's propaganda in this world. So the regular people have probably been taught to believe that replicants are the bad guys, and that is why they don't question replicants getting retired, aka murdered.
Slaves are the bad guys. Yeah. Don't question them getting hung in the streets or whatever. I mean, it's
a little different in the sense that they have the enhanced abilities also, because that is threatening. So they're not normal people. So it's the whole part of, if you look at Superman, is he a hero or is he a villain? Because at any moment, he's stronger than literally everyone here. Like, he can't lose unless we have his weakness. So he could take us all out if he really wanted to. So the same thing with them. And that's scary when you know that you have no shot in winning. So I don't know if they're, how do you say that they're good if you know that they could turn on you at any moment and you would lose?
It's definitely an interesting kind of world that they set up within this. And so we move on from Rachel. He ends up giving the test. I'm blanking on the name of the test, but it's a test.
The Voight-Kampff test,
which is basically an empathy test. They're testing to see if it's a human or not a human. And I think also they're testing to see if the AI is developing human tendencies as well, because maybe if they pass it and have empathy, they maybe terminate them early or not. I'm not sure if they really explained that. I was a little unclear on what they would do after the test was done if they passed it.
From what I've gathered, they would essentially retire on the spot, which we know what that means.
And so we start with Leon also getting the test. That's how we start. And he shoots the test proctor when he asks about his mother, which maybe that was just pushing to such a degree where they're realizing they don't have a mother. They're not born. They're creating that existential crisis that causes an AI to have.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Just like too much to even, they're four-year-olds. They're not even four-year-olds. They're three-year-olds. Ironically, around like three or four, I believe, is when kids start asking why all the time. Isn't that like the why stage? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting that at this age, the replicants enter the why stage. So it's like they are like a child with superhuman fucking strength. You have a toddler with the ability to cause mayhem, and some of them are specifically bred with that. Like Roy Batty, it's specifically bred to be that from doing what he was designed to do.
Yep.
Not his fault. It's no free will. It's a free will. I'm sure there's a free will discussion within there too and everything. And there's definitely a lot of meat on the bone to digest, which is why like the actual story and plot itself it's so simple, but I guess it doesn't need to be much more than that because it's the other elements that are occupying most of the space in this movie. Interesting.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that's why personally for me, I think my favorite character in the film is Roy, played by the late, great Rucker Hauer. He's so good in this movie. We'll get to my favorite scene in a second. I think most people can probably guess what it is, but he is a criminal simply for being curious. Like, he just wants to know why. Why is he sent to do this? And more specifically, what makes others human and what makes a replicant a replicant? He is trying to form that answer, and he is searching through it throughout the entire film, and he does not find the answer until literally the very end, right when he's about to die, which I'm sure we'll talk about in just a second.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Christina, or should we just
continue? No, we can continue.
All right, we'll continue to run on through this blade. So
I need to leave early.
Yeah, that was a pretty sharp pun, I know.
Yeah, that was
early on the razor's edge, blade's edge.
I was gonna make that
one. I regret being here. So,
anyways, speaking of regret, let's get to the scene I regret watching: the Deckard love scene, which I know there's I'm sure there's an argument for, and we're gonna hear it from Payson, the defendant lawyer for the Purge Blade Runner trial here, but Rachel and Deckard have a very forced beginning of a love scene. Where there's some, Rachel, thank God, another woman being physically assaulted by a man. So we're back on that train, Christina, of slapping, punching, and pushing of women. We are into that here, apparently. And Deckard is like telling Rachel to like say he loves her or loves him. And just, it's just very forced, very awkward. Does not seem like how love works or women work or consensual sex works. Is there any kind of, what are your thoughts on that scene? Because it's just a scene that is, I don't know if it aged poorly or it was never supposed to be considered okay or
it is not aged well. I'm completely 100% with you. It is, even though this is one of my favorite movies of all time, this is a super, super uncomfortable scene that is very hard to watch in multiple ways. The one little thing I will say is I feel like I know what Ridley Scott was going for. I think he was going for Rachel is completely shut out of her emotions, and Deckard is trying to get her to essentially open up her human side and to love in a way, but it does not come off that way whatsoever. It comes off super, super rape-esque, and it's not a comfortable scene in any sense of the imagination, and I'm 100% right there with you. If people can't enjoy this movie because of this one scene, I feel sorry for them, but I also completely get it.
Yeah. Were you asleep for this scene, Christina? Did you get lucky enough to sleep through that?
I'm like, start to kiss, and then I was like, I don't really care about this. Because I was like, this is ridiculous, bro. You know she's not even human. Like, how, like, your game is that bad, like you can't even swing it with real chicks?
Like
Harrison Ford was like semi-cute back then, but it's like, bro, you literally have the personality of like my left pinky toe. Like, you are so boring. Like, no wonder nobody wants you, and you have to like bang a replicant. Like, I do not feel bad for you.
That's rough.
You know, it's very funny because in the original cut, one of the most famous things they removed was there is a voiceover narration by Harrison Ford throughout the entire film, and he delivers that narration exactly how you would expect. It is the most wooden narration you could possibly imagine.
God. Here's my thing. Like, when I watch movies, I also look at the leading man. Like, do I like you? Would I want to be with you? Would I even want to be your friend? And let me tell you, we haven't really watched a lot where I felt that kind of connection. And Harrison Ford just did not do it for me. And I was just like, I was just not into this. I also felt like Rachel had very weird hair. So like, I wasn't really into her either. So I just like, yeah, I was, once I started to kiss, I was like, I don't even care about this. This is such a forced love story. Like, it didn't even feel organic to me, because it can't be organic because she's not like a real person.
No, yeah, no, yeah, 100%. No, this is not a idealistic relationship in any sense of the word, but yeah.
I feel like I'm always here to just bring the podcast down a couple notches. Like, somebody says something super intelligent, I'm like, let me break it down for you.
No, it's totally fine. It's, but like, this is three very different views on this movie, honestly, which I think makes for an interesting discussion at the end of the day. So it's not, I think that's your reaction to the scene, and I think that's completely valid. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so we'll move on. I mean, I don't want to act like that scene really didn't define the movie for me. It didn't ruin the movie for me. It was just like, definitely watching it with the people's eyebrow a little bit for a second. And then, I mean, they don't show any, you know, anything. They definitely imply a sex scene happened, but we don't know. And so move past that. You know, we talked about the snake stripper and all of that issue, and how, I mean, he really just uses his words to kind of get into her presence. And, you know, then she, you know, whoops his ass, chases her through, so she gets shot. We'll move past that. Do we want to talk about Sebastian and the Pris storyline a little bit? JF Sebastian.
That was super weird.
It's super weird, but I love it. Like,
because I just did not like this part of it.
That's fair. That's fair. I totally get that. I like the weird elements of that thing. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely not supposed to be like, oh, this is so nice. To the audience at home, essentially what Pris does, Pris meets with Sebastian, essentially tries to seduce him. And Sebastian has a thing for toys. So he essentially dresses Pris up in the style of one of his toys. And it is very strange, but it's also strange in like a really cool, weird way.
Yeah, and he thinks he's like getting somewhere with Pris, I feel like. And it's just like, he's so desperate for companionship. He's an engineer. He had created two little munchkin looking guys, who one of which like walks into a wall all the time to just show he's not quite honed in his craft, but enough to kind of make these sad little versions of friends. He's in this huge, empty, vacant building. Refers to how there's tons of space in Los Angeles. So I think this is at the beginning of what leads to the ego crisis that's shown in 2049. Specifically, but just I mean, he thinks he's getting somewhere, and then Roy just kind of shows up and walks in and was like, thanks buddy, slaps him like on the shoulder, basically makes out with Pris right in front of him. You just see like nice guy JF, like, yeah, like the incel nice guy JF, just man, she's like, and then you kind of don't feel bad for him, because again, like, I'm just not a fan of like manipulation and taking advantage of like situations and thinking that garners you any sort of And so it's like, but like the actor who played that, the casting of JF Sebastian was perfect, because that actor, he just always, he sounds like that all the time. I don't know his name. And
William Sanderson.
You've seen this guy, and he's just a very well-known character actor, but the way he speaks, he just kind of sounds, without sounding rude, like he is someone who can be easily taken advantage of. So you kind of don't look into some of his character traits here. He ends up being like, yeah, I can get you guys into Tyrell. Like, I know that's what they're asking about. And long story short, gets him into Tyrell, and we get to final little confrontation between Tyrell and Roy, where Roy gets asked kind of why he was created to his creator. He finally is at the moment he's been waiting for. And it's just like, you imagine that this creator is going to have all the answers, going to give you what you want actually at the end of the day, which is more life. That's just what he said. He's like, I want more life.
And here's Tyrell dying as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's just like, and then Tyrell's like, there's nothing I can do. Once the sequence has begun, the reverse mutation like of the cells, like basically once you're essentially human without being human, because that's what happens to our cells as they, you know, reverse mutate and generate slowly. I mean, I'm no scientist, as you can hear from that description, but it's essentially saying you're human without being human. Once it started the process, there's nothing. And like a four-year-old, he throws a tantrum, but he's a four-year-old with superhuman strength. Yeah. So grabs him by the skull, puts his thumbs in the eyes.
That was gross. I wish I was asleep for that part, but I unfortunately was very conscious for that part.
Yeah.
That was gross.
If anyone's played God of War 3, the way you kill Poseidon, it's just like that.
Yeah, or the mountain and the viper. There's been so many movies now where characters have like killed other characters by putting the thumbs through the eyes. I wonder if this was the first one to do that.
I have to think about that, but it totally could be, because I can't think of many others.
They're using practical effects, which you gotta love to see. The other thing with the final cut is that there are a few spots where they smoothed over the CGI, but it's not done in a way like we'll soon be talking about with the Star Wars movies. I think it's done in a much more smooth way. New versions of the Star Wars movies, George Lucas decided to add a bunch of CGI. And it just doesn't, it does not work in 1977 Star Wars. So we'll talk about that soon on Digesting the Force. Stay tuned for that experiment coming out May 4th. May the 4th be with you. But I'll go to Christina first to see if she just has any thoughts on the conversation. Or did you like, were you kind of listening to
what conversation?
Between Roy and Tyrell.
No, that all got lost for me once I saw someone die with their eyeballs. Guys, I'm going to be honest.
Okay, Jason, your thoughts.
I just think this scene is very relevant to, like, let's say when you're like an edgy teen in a way, and you just have all these questions about life, and you're just so, and maybe you just go up to like your parents or like your counselor, and you're so mad, just like, what does this mean? Like, what is the purpose of all this? And sometimes they just don't have the answer. Sometimes that it's just life, and that's what we're here for. And I know it sucks, but sometimes that's how it is. One of my other favorite movies, the Coen Brothers, A Serious Man. The main character is literally asking throughout the entire film, what does all this mean? Why is all this happening? And at the end of the movie, essentially you're supposed to say there's no reason, you're fucked regardless, we're all fucked, have a great day.
Some good old-fashioned nihilism for the podcast. Yeah. What Christina's feeling right now.
I'm sorry, Christina.
we're almost done and then we'll,
I just can't wait to give my rating. That's what I'm just waiting for.
And then we will retire this podcast. Yeah, that's any other thoughts kind of on Tyrell before we put the kibosh on kind of him and move on to the tears in the rain?
I'm good. Yeah. Let's move on to that.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, that is something I had a little bit of knowledge coming in, but just not realizing kind of how great it was going to be when it finally got to that scene. It's the final confrontation now with, and I know you're looking at me weird, Christina, but when you're checked out, it's hard to.
Well, no, because I checked back in because you had told me and Anthony had told me like, oh, the ending speech is great. And I listened to it and I was like, that's it.
Oh man.
I was like, that's what I was supposed to be like super pumped about. This was like, I was expecting like Independence Day level.
Completely different.
Being epic and like touching my soul on like a spiritual level. And basically this guy's just like whining about like why he can't live longer. And I was like, dude, like honestly, like everyone dies. Like get over yourself. You're not even real. He's not even real. It's not even real.
Okay.
I'm just here to bring the truth. Like, I'm sorry. People that listen to this podcast, they understand where I'm coming from because I always speak the truth. And this is what normal people think about movies.
That's fair. No, me and Aaron are the weirdos. Like, I think we have completely acknowledged that, but
Okay, in case you have a slightly more interesting take than that deep take from Christina, I was pretty interested in this whole final confrontation. A lot of this movie, I was kind of wavering in and out on. Some of it really worked with me, others of it didn't. This really did. The Jesus metaphor was a little on point when Roy sticks the needle through his hand, but I also understood at that point that's what he needed to feel that last little bit of life left in him. And he was a Christ metaphor for the replicants throughout this movie. So I do think that was totally fine. And you know, they get to the point where Roy has the opportunity to kill Deckard. And Deckard's hanging on the edge of the, first of all, that jump he made, another confirmation he's human. That was such a human, weak-ass jump across a building that would happen. Yeah. If I tried to, you know, like, you see people jump across buildings like Spider-Man and all these movies all the time. If you really jumped across a building, it would look like how Deckard tried to jump across the building. Like, very pathetic, hardly going anywhere. And then he's hanging there, and Roy can kill him. And Roy finally finds humanity at the end of the play.
Grabs him by the hand. I know, but like, honest to God, I wish Roy would have just put us all out of our misery and just ended the movie.
That's
his character's climax. Like, that is the moment where he has been searching for humanity throughout this whole time. And what does it mean to be human? And Deckard is right there. He's about to die. And he finally realizes being human means caring for others and having feelings. And that's why he saves him. He saves this person that's been trying to kill him throughout the entire movie. And just to prove a point to Deckard that what replicants are and how they should be treated equally. And then that monologue, just everything. He just goes on through saying all the beautiful things he has seen, all the life he has lived, and how it's all going to be lost like tears in rain.
Come on, Christina. Open up your heart. Find some humanity.
I just, honest to God, feel like I am a replicant, because I feel like tears in rain, like, what even, like, what are we talking about? Like, how dramatic can you be?
Tears in rain.
If you're crying, your tears will be sucked out by the rain. Like, no one will be able to tell you're crying.
Well, then you're not crying hard enough. Like, okay, like, if you want people to know you're crying, like, let's
I know how to cry, Christina.
Give me some sobs. I would like, you know what I mean? Then people will know. Your face will get all crunched up. They'll be like, what's up with your face? Oh, those can't just be raindrops. You're obviously crying.
But here's the thing. All your memories fade. It happens to humans, too. This is like, all of our memories are ever fleeting, and we don't remember anything that happens to us. And as it gets further away, it becomes a distant memory and a memory of a memory of a memory, and it gets lost. It's an overall examination on how our lives are no less finite than their lives. It's showing that replicants and humans are the same. The question doesn't matter by the end of the movie. It all is just different forms of life. Like, what makes life, what doesn't make life. That's what he's coming to at the end of the movie. And like, it's like he's saving someone who killed his friends, who's there to kill him. He knows his life is ending, and he's just realizing he's
having at the very end, at the very end of his life.
And then he dies literally in the rain, like there, which, and it's implied he's crying to the point like that he can, which probably replicants can't even cry, but he's doing his version of what that is. And it's just like, I mean, it's tragic at the end because it was inevitable from the beginning, and it never was really in doubt what was going to happen to them. It's like it wasn't meant to be a surprise. It was just meant to be.
On the flip side, you're just a douche for a really long time, and then you feel bad about it when you're about to die, so you say some crap.
I think.
Wow. Okay. Well,
you know, you were terrible, and then you know you're about to die, so you're like, I'm just going to go out on a positive note here.
I think that the movie should have ended right after that speech, or very closely after that. Kind of just, I don't remember exactly what happens, but it's essentially Deckard and Rachel running off to end the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. It, like, I didn't love the ending, left me feeling a little bit flat.
It's fair. The ending to the original cut to me is even worse, because it very much shows them like in the car, and Rachel looks over at Deckard, and they look over at each other, and they kind of smile, and it leaves it on too much of an uplifting note. It leaves with the final cut, to me, it's much more of a happy medium of saying like, what's going to happen? Who really knows?
Yeah. I mean, I just wish it would have left me a little more with that. I did feel like it still left me feeling that kind of, they drove off ran off away from the base into the sun. So I didn't love the ending, and yeah, just overall, definitely the tears in the rain speech lived up for me. And so definitely was a highlight of the movie for me. Christina, did you have a particular highlight?
I do appreciate, I liked at the end, wasn't it like the random dude was just like, it's too bad she won't live, but then again, who does?
Yep, I love that line so much.
And I was like, that kind of just brings it like literally nothing lasts forever. Nobody lives forever, so everybody's going to die at some point.
Not everybody lives, but everybody dies.
Right.
Fair enough. There are all sorts of nuggets of great lines. If you could see what your eyes have seen through what I've seen with your eyes when he's speaking to the eye scientist, and that whole scene was crazy too. I mean, him freezing kind of to death in there, and just like that, he's just like makes eyes. He doesn't, it's just his part of the cog in the machine, and it's just like humans diffusing. But there's just all sorts of great lines like that. Yeah, but definitely Tears in the Rain was my highlight. What would your overall kind of highlight of this movie be if you had to break it down into one specific for you?
I mean, Tears and Rain, definitely. But if I could just take one other thing, I can't preface how much I love the score by Vangelis. This is one of my favorite scores of all time. It could very well be my favorite score. I love just how every single track just carries over to the other track. I think it completely tells a story, even if you're just listening to the score on its own. And that's another one of my favorite parts.
Yeah. And again, like when I said earlier, it's just like, it's so smooth. It's almost too smooth for me. Like, and with the
like a lullaby.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. Like,
and I think that's totally fair.
I've watched it so many times and gotten tired watching it. And I do think even if I rewatched it again, I'd have to really make sure to be awake, because otherwise I do think if it would eventually, like, just the visuals and everything, there's just something very soothing about this movie, but it really is beautiful too. I do mean that. So yeah, now we're going to get, this was a great discussion, Christina, for what you did add to the discussion when you did. Thank you. You know, and we love you here, needless to say.
I'm just here to just crap on all over good movies.
You know, you're here to bring up iRobot multiple times in a discussion about
Predator. I love iRobot, like a lot. Like, okay. Will Smith movies are a soft spot of mine.
Okay.
iRobot and Wild Wild West are like...
If you want, as we enter our rating section, you can give your rating for both iRobot and Predator, just to make people feel extra horrible about this rating coming up. So,
Christina,
yeah, please.
I would give iRobot a 4.5 out of 5 because it is a masterpiece. When somebody was being ridiculous and Will Smith sneezes and it's like, I'm sorry, I'm allergic to bullshit, is my favorite line of any movie that has ever been written. It is phenomenal. You have Shia LaBeouf. Like, hello. This movie, however, I hated every single second of this movie. If I didn't love Payson so much, I would not have finished this movie because this was an absolute snooze fest. Okay. I don't even think, are the actors in this movie actually professionally trained? Because at this point, it was like, are you just reading off of a teleprompter to deliver your lines?
Why are you talking about Rutger Hauer now?
I didn't even know who Rutger Hauer was. I'm not really a Rutgers fan. I went to Penn State, so I don't really care about Rutgers. So I felt like it was, everybody delivered their lines so annoyingly. The score, I literally fell asleep, and it was 4 p.m. on a Monday afternoon. I don't like sci-fi. I didn't like that some guy got killed with his eyeballs. I just didn't like this movie at all. I understand there's big themes. I get it. I'm a trash person when it comes to this.
God, let go of me. Let me fall to my death. Let go of my hand.
I am giving this movie a very generous 1 out of 5 stars.
Oh my God.
This was horrific. If I had to pick between this and Blair Witch Project, it's Blair Witch 10 times out of 10 compared to this movie. Ooh. Because this movie was not a good time. I did not have fun watching it. And it makes me very nervous to watch Star Wars because I know I have to watch Harrison Ford in it, and he was awful.
Oh,
boy. This is right up there.
Francis Ford
Coppola's story. Oh, just in case our listeners had an epileptic shock or anything in the last minute, to recap, Christina's ratings: 4.5 for iRobot, 1 out of 5 for Blade Runner.
I did not enjoy this movie at all.
I'm going to leave Payson for last year. This we'll slowly gauge up here. I'm not a 1 out of 5 on Blade Runner, but from my first view of it, I was left a little bit underwhelmed, and it was hard for me to walk back the later sci-fi runners, which Blade Runner walked for so these movies could run. Yes. And that is not the movie's fault exactly, but it is just my rating on my experience of my first watch. It's hard for me because I am one of these cinephiles, one of these Paysons, one of these people who I think within my realm of people, I am going to be in a minority, I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of 5, you know, and it's just, I recognize that the set design is gorgeous. The score I did like, but the score was almost too soothing to me. And I could go to sleep to that score. I would never listen to that score during the daytime that I could think of, you know, or like during a time where I was trying to like get, it wouldn't amp me up. I can recognize it's beautiful, but you know, it's a different kind of score for that in all fairness. And just overall, besides a few of the scenes, I love talking about this subject, whether it was this movie or not. So it's just like that part of it, I don't give as much credit to the movie for, I guess. So I'm being a little bit harsh, not quite Christina levels harsh here, but 2.5 for me. Payson, your rating, it's Letterboxd standards, Letterboxd score out of 5, half stars are allowed.
Okay, well, first off, I was going to be generous to iRobot, but I don't think I am now. I think, if I'm being honest, I think I would give it 3 out of 5. I think it's a fine movie. Like, it isn't too, like, offensively bad or anything, but also, like, doesn't really leave that strong of an impression. So that's where I would give iRobot. I mean, it's one of my favorite films of all time for a reason. The questions it asks, the characters, the visuals, the score, the production design, I love every single thing about this movie. This is my favorite Ridley Scott film. It's one of the films I think I've rewatched multiple times. I have a poster of it right there. It's a 5 out of 5 for me. Not even a question. There's a reason why 1982 is considered the greatest year in sci-fi history, and this is one of the main reasons.
I love it. There is no way we'll ever have a more diverse rating of scores than that. I don't think it'd be possible unless Christina would straight up said 0.
I didn't know that was an option.
Well, too late now. You have to give it. I actually won't allow 0 stars for this. I didn't even love it. I can't say 0. Like, that's just wrong. But we get an average for Blade Runner of a 2.83. Which has gotta hurt.
You know what? When it first came out, this movie was not well loved. So this score reflects that.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, we're just stuck in the 80s here.
It was a first time watch for me, and that's the point of this podcast, is we watch a movie for the very first time and then we talk about it. So you have to go off of your genuine impressions of it the first time and then try to stick with whatever you thought before we talk about it. Because there's been a lot of times where we've had a conversation, I'm like, oh, you know, I didn't think of it that way. That actually makes us a whole lot better. I would almost want to rewatch this to, you know, go along with our discussion, but we got to stick to what it was. And then when I watched this movie, I was like, oh dear God, if it wasn't Payson, I would not have finished this.
And I appreciate you mentioning that, because that is definitely the point of this podcast, is that we are going on first time views. Christina's first time views are incredibly blind, with all due respect, and really adds to, you know, what makes us unique. We can go and find a million podcasts that have the same opinions about Blade Runner, and it's what you're supposed to say about it or think about it. And it's just like, on here, this conversation today, I had a great time with it, because all three of us brought our perspectives when we could and when we didn't. It's totally fine. And this is a movie that I can acknowledge, even though I've only watched it twice now. I liked it more than the second time, for sure. And I do think it would improve on viewings and allowing some space between the viewings. And like I said earlier, I love 2049. And I do, if I had to say it, 2049 is what this movie should have been for me. It's what it felt like, that one. So that is what I will say. So for next week, first of all, Payson, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah,
being a great sport with this. I know how hard it is to hear Christina tear apart things you love. She does it to me all the time.
I'm very good, guys.
But like, we still love her. That's her power, is that she can destroy you and you still, you know, can't help it. Next week, Adam Collins of the Schmodown, former singles champion, a fantastic guy, a funny story, which I probably will talk about with him again next week, of how I met him. But just a very short, he looked the same when I met him, of course.
Yeah.
I've never seen him now. I swear he just like cuts it to his hair to a certain length every day. And like, but you know, we love him for it. The first time I played with him in Full Metal Classic, so there's a plug for a fan league if you want to check out Full Metal Classic. It's a great way to get involved with trivia. He was so calm and nice. I was like, what are you, like a serial killer? And he just like laughed about it. So like, it was so non-confrontational, like Adam is. And like, I kept going back and I'm like, dude, I called you a serial killer. I don't even know you. Like, oh, that's just hilarious. It's like, and he like went on to like get like every question right. I was like, who is this like guy? Like,
But he's a replicant, obviously. Yeah,
he's. Oh, yeah. I definitely think he's the replicant who got the extended lifespan and got like the like A on the mental level. And you know, I won't say his level on the physical. Who knows? But he wants to be on for documentary. He seeked out documentary immediately, and the documentary he selected is called Koyan Nitgatsu. See, Koyan Nitgatsu, which is well known for cinephiles. It is a Hopi word meaning life out of balance. And this is a renowned documentary that basically reveals how humanity has grown apart from nature. And one of the things specifically on IMDb, our favorite site in the world, synopsis for this movie is quite hilarious for a podcast to cover. A collection of expertly photographed phenomena with no conventional plot, and the focus on nature and humanity and the relationship between them, known for its lack of narration. So thank you, Adam Collins, for the very basic common selection of Koyan Nitgatsu.
Christina's just thinking, like, kill me.
All I'm thinking is, like, I hate nature, so, like, I'm super pumped to watch this movie.
It's our second straight movie from 1982. It is only an hour and 26 minutes, and I'm sure that Christina is going to have some fascinating things to say about this. I cannot wait, because I don't think Christina's going to have a choice next week, and she's going to have to watch the documentary Koyan Nitgatsu. So until next week, for Aaron, for Christina, for Payson, keep digesting cinema and keep running on those blades. Goodbye, everybody.